Today's shir is Masechta Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Chavav. We will begin on Daf Kuf Chav Hei Yom Beis, four lines from the bottom. Amra Papi, Hilchasa. The halacha is, Ein Abal Noitel Baroi Kebe Mokhsik. A husband is not entitled to Yarshin his wife, even though we've previously learned that a husband does Yarshin his wife. But if what she left over was only roi na muhsik, then he's not entitled to yarshin her. Which means the classical example. The classical example is that a husband and a wife were married, and the wife predeceases her husband, and after she dies, her father passes away, and she, alone, or she with sisters perhaps, yarshin their father. So even though, as we just said, the husband is the yarish of his wife, here, since this Yerusha only came after she passed away, this is a situation of Roy, and here the husband will not be the Yerusha of his wife. And as we have been learning, even though a Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim, we'll continue discussing this halacha, he's not entitled to Pishnayim in what's Roy, only what's in Muchsik. Furthermore, Vein a Bechor Noitel Pishnayim B'milva, as we have been learning in the last number of shiurim, a bechor is not entitled paskins rapapa ta pishnayim in accounts receivable, and it makes no difference how those accounts receivables were paid, ben shigav a karka, ben shigav a mos, whether those accounts receivable were paid to the father's estate in kish or they were paid in karka. When we learn this Gemara, Rapapa's Halacha, a question comes up, obvious question, which has serious ramifications, La Halacha L'maisa. The Gemara is teaching us, Rapapa's teaching us, that a Bechor and a husband have the same rule, that they don't Yarshin B'roi K'b'muchsak. So the obvious question is, so when Rapapa says this, why doesn't he combine the Halacha of both of them? There ain't a Baal, there ain't a Bechor, Neitlim b'roi k'muchsik. Why does he teach it as two separate rules? So some Rishonim suggest, because one halacha is based on a Mishnah, the halacha of Bechor, the other is not based on an explicit Mishnah, and therefore Rapapa wanted to keep them separate. You have most Rishonim, and so is the halacha, say that there's a fundamental difference in the halacha, even though the Gemara has quoted that the halacha is the same, that both a husband and a son, a Bechor, a non-Natal D'Roi K'muchsik, the rules are not identical. The two most obvious areas where they're not identical is regarding one halacha that we've been discussing, is that everybody's in agreement that if after the person passed away, the Yorshim invested in making the estate better, that that's considered roi. But we discussed earlier in our sugyas, what is the din of shvach sh'olam me'aleha? That the items that the state was left got accrued a value by itself. Is that considered roi or muhsik? And we learned that the opinion of the chachamim is that that's considered roi. Say to Rishonim, that even though as far as the halacha of a bechor is concerned, that is considered roi, and the Bechor, therefore, is not entitled to Pishnayim, as far as the husband is concerned, it's not considered Roy. One. Another Nafgamina is exactly what the Gemara discusses. Our Gemara just Paskin, the Papa just Paskin, that we hold that all accounts receivable are considered, all Milva are considered Roy, and therefore the Bechor is not entitled to Pishnayim. That is only regarding a Bechor. But as guarding a husband is concerned, a milva will not be considered roi, it will be considered muhsik. And of course we need to understand, if the Gemara is saying that a husband and a bechor are treated in the same way, why are we differentiating such significant nafkaminas? So I saw two approaches in the Rishonim. One approach that most Rishonim suggest is that the rights that a husband has to his wife's property says wife's Yerusha, and the Bechor's rights are two different categories. The Torah uses the word loseisloi. The Torah uses the word matana in regards to Bechor's pishnayim. A husband's right is not a matana. A husband's right is a Yerusha. And Yerusha and matana have very different rules and very different implications. One way of understanding. Another way of understanding is that a Bechor is not considered an individual Yerush, meaning as follows. Even if somebody leaves over a Bechor, he can leave over other sons. So yes, the Bechor gets Pishnayim, but he shares the Yerusha with his brothers. Where is a husband? The husband is the sole Yerush of his wife. And even if they're children, whatever, that doesn't change the reality that the husband is the sole Yerush. And since the husband is the sole Yerush, whereas the Bechor is not a sole Yerush, the husband has greater rights than a Bechor. In fact, some Mefarshim use this approach of explanation to discuss a yeshiva shishayla. In yeshivas, the Dvar Avram discusses this, many Achronim Rav Chanan discusses this, asks the following question. When someone passed away and he left one son, and that son was also Bechor, it was his only child, he was a Bechor, and his only Yerush. So now that one child takes the entire Yerusha. How do we look at that one son taking the entire Yerusha? Do we look at it? He's the sole Yerush. Or do we say that what he's getting is going to be getting part of it as a Bechor entitlement and part of it as a Yerush entitlement? Perhaps what our Gemara is teaching us is that only a husband is considered a sole Yerush. But a Bechor, even if he's the only physical Yerush, but if he approaches this estate as a Bechor, his Yerusha is divided into two categories. There's a Bechor category and there's a Yerusha category because he's a Bechor. Now says the Gemara another situation. Umalvash imay palgi, which means as follows. We just learned, the Gemara just paskened, that accounts receivable, the Bechor is not entitled to Pishnayim. What would be the halacha? What would be the halacha if the Bechor himself owed money to the father? And now the father passed away. So do we look at that money as a milva? And the Gemara just paskened that a milva money, the Bechor is not entitled to Pishnayim? Or do we look at it as not milva money, and we'll explain why maybe this should not be considered a regular milva situation, and then the Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim? Says the Gemara, because we don't know what to do, this money palgi should be divided. Which means as follows. Let's say the father left $180 chayiv that he owed the Bechor. And let's say he left two sons. So $60 the Bechor is entitled to, because he's a son. $60 he's entitled to. $60 the other brother is entitled to. Now the question is the third 60. Do we say that that's going to be considered the Yerush, the second, the Pishnayim of the Bechor? Or do we say not? So what is the Gemara suggesting? $30 of that third 60 should be given to the Bechor. And the other third should be divided amongst the brothers, with the Bechor being one of the brothers that gets it. Other Rishonim suggested if they're not the brothers, the Bechor already got half, he's not included in that half. Why should it be different? So there are two approaches in the Rishonim. The Rashbam's approach is as follows. We just finished learning, actually. We've been learning in the last couple of Shurim, that a milv is considered roi. A milv is not considered muchzik. Why? So it's the obvious answer, because when you lend money to somebody, when you have an account receivable by somebody, you're never quite certain that you're going to get that money back. When the Bechor entered a relationship with his father, he had every reason to want to treat this milva not like a regular milva. Because the more that it's not like a regular milva, the more it'll be muchzik. And the more it's muchzik, the more the Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim. So if the Bechor himself is the Loiva, even though a regular milva may not be considered muchzik, this milva will be considered muchzik. That's one approach in the Rishayim. Another approach in the Rishayim is that it's like going from the right pocket to the left pocket. Who's the one that's going to be collecting the money? The Bechor. Because now he's a Yorish of his father. So part of the money that he owes, he's keeping. When do we say that a milva is considered roi? That the father lent somebody money, not to one of his children, and now that's an account receivable to the father. So that money is considered roi. But it's the children themselves, the Yorishim themselves, who are paying. That may be not a regular situation of milva. What's the nafkamina between these two pshatim? The nafkamina between these two pshatim is at what point does a milva made to a bechor become in the category of muchzik? According to the approach of the Rashbam, at its very inception, even though a milva is normally considered roi, this milva is considered muchzik. According to the other approach, it only becomes muchzik after the father dies and the money is owed and the bechor is a both a malva and a loiva at the same time. So Tysus asks, the Agamara is saying, since we don't know what to do, Palgi, we should take that shear, that Pishnayim portion, and divide it. Which is essentially following the opinion of Sumchus. We've learned Sumchus' opinion countless times. The moment of multiple Safak Cholkim, when we have a question what to do, we divide it. But we know we don't follow that opinion. We know that the Rabbanan, the Chacham, disagree with Sumchus and don't hold moment of multiple Safak Cholkim. So why is Al Gemara here saying that we should divide the money? So Tosfos says, Takanas Chachamim. This is a special Takanas Chachamim that they made, that in such circumstances they should divide the money. That's how Tosfos learns. The Yad Ramah has a different teretz. He says, the Chachamim who argue on Sumchus and don't follow the rule of Mamon HaMotu B'Safa Kalkim, what do they hold? They always say, Amotzim Chaver Olav Araya. So let's understand what the Chachamim hold, says the Yad Ramah. I owe you money. You and I have a sichsach, have an argument. You say, I owe you money. I say, I don't owe you money. Sumchus says, Maman Amotu B'Safik, Cholkim. There's a fight over $100. I should give you $50. The Chachamim say, no. There's a standard operating rule. How much mechaver olav araya? And that's applicable here too. Says the Yad Ramah, where do we say much mechaver olav araya? In the case I just described, I say, I don't owe you the money. You say, I do owe you the money. But in this circumstance, the Bechor is not arguing that he owes the money. The only argument is, the only question is it muchzik or is it roi? So this is not a situation where Moitz Mechaveir Olav Araya is appropriate. And that's why the Chacham will agree that Cholkin is what should be followed. Before we go further, there's an interesting vart from Rav Shlomo Kluger. Because even though we're learning that Bechor doesn't get his Pishnayim Beroi. I just should say two obvious rules. What's Muchzik Bechor is entitled to, even if the Bechor is not alive. That means, let's say you had a person, Yaakov. Yaakov had a Bechor, Reuven, and Shimon, and Levi. And Reuven, his Bechor, passes away before Yaakov. So when Yaakov dies, Reuven's Yarshim are entitled to Pishnayim as an extension of Reuven. Furthermore, there's a halacha that even though we're saying that a Bechor is not entitled to Pishnayim and a Milva, there's a different rule by Milva Shieshoi Moi Mashkin. If the Milva has a Mashkin, then the Bechor is entitled to Pishnayim. But there's a question that all the Mepharshim ask. We've already discussed this question previously. The Torah says, Apostle Layucha Levaker has been Ahuva Pebnei Sunua. If a person has two sons, and one son is the child of the wife he likes, and one is the child of the wife he doesn't like, but it happens to be that the child of the wife he dislikes is his Bechor, that's the Bechor. And you're not allowed to treat another one as a Bechor. So the question comes up, how did Yaakov do this? That Yaakov went and took away the Bechor from Reuven and gave it to Yosef. So the Mepharshim discusses, we've already said, answers ourselves. Says the Imre Shefer, Reb Shlomo Kluger, says, let's learn the pasuk that teaches us what happened when Yaakov Avinu gave the Bechor to Menashe and Ephraim. He says, V'ata, Shnei Benecha, Hanelodecha, Kruvim v'shim, Menashe v'Ephraim, Kruvim v'shim v'Yuli. So what's the word v'ata? Now. I'm making the statement now. Of course, when I'm talking, it's now. What is the Torah trying to tell us now? Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, Yaakov Avinu was bothered with the same problem. But Yaakov Avinu was saying, what am I giving Menashe v'Ephraim a double portion in? In Eretz Yisrael, as we've learned. Eretz Yisrael, at that point, Yaakov Avinu wasn't a muchzik in Eretz Yisrael. He was still in Mitzrayim. We've learned that a Bechor is not entitled to Pishnayim in something that's only Roy. So Yaakov Avinu is saying, you know what I'm doing is halachically legitimate? Because Va'ata, when am I making this declaration? I'm making it here and now when I'm in Mitzrayim. And therefore, Eretz Yisrael is only Roy. And Roy, Reuven, even if you're the Bechor, you don't have no rights to receive a double portion. Therefore, I have a right to give it to Menashe v'Ephraim. Because it's v'ata. It's now and I'm making the statement. Continues the Gemara. Arav Huna Merav Asi. Bechor Shemicha Micha. Which means as follows. The way most Rishonim explain the Gemara. Our Gemara now is entering into a very fundamental question. Yerusha only becomes a Yerush when it's actually divided. That means if a father, Rahman Slam, passes away, so you have to make a Levaya, you have to set Shiva. So the Yerusha doesn't become, the state is not considered divided until it's physically divided. What is the halacha regarding Bechayra? So the halacha regarding Bechayra is that as soon as the Bechar makes a claim on the Bechayra, he has that prayer, the Pishnayim, becomes his immediately. So we have the following situation. The father passed away, and as we've been learning, any shvach, any accrual of value that happens, he doesn't get pishnayim. To avoid that problem, to avoid that loss, the Bechor makes an immediate announcement, anything that is mine because of the pishnayim, I want it to be mine immediately. So the halacha says the Gemara, it becomes his. However, says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Mestava Tamad Rav Asi, Banovim Ubotzrim, Zeisim Moskim. If he's cutting grapes and he's cutting olives. So the halacha is that since the Bechor staked out his position, that Pishnayim portion that's entitled to him is already his, and they can't, and therefore, if it went up in value, it belongs purely to the Bechor. However, point out to Rishonim, and he doesn't have to share that incremental value with his brothers. But let's say his brothers were the ones that cut the grapes, they cut the olives. So they spent money on doing it. So he has to reimburse them for their expense in doing it. So Gemara, we learned actually in Baba Kama. The Gemara Masechta Baba Kama says we have to look, what is more, the incremental value or the expense, whichever is the lesser of the two costs, is what he will have to reinvest them. Rav Yosef Amar Filo Darchem, even if they turn them into wine, and it goes up in value because now it's wine, it belongs to the Bechor. Ask the Gemara, Darcha Mikara Envi Hashti Chamri. We know our halacha is like this. If somebody, again, Gemara that we learned in Masechta Baba Kama, if somebody steals grapes for someone else, and the Ganef, the Gazlin, goes and turns those grapes into wine, since he did a Shinui Maisa, the halacha is that he only has to repay the person he stole from the value of what he stole. And if they went up in value because now it's wine, that incremental value goes to the Ganef. So here, if his brothers didn't just cut the grapes, but they made it into wine, they made the olives into oil, so they made a Shinui Maisa. And it's a significant Shinui Maisa. Unlike just cutting, explained Rishonim, which is not really a significant act. So why should they have to pay him? It's theirs. They made a Shinui Maisa. Answers the Gemara, to the armor of Ukr Bachamalit and Lodomei Hezek and Novav. Hachinami, Nois Lodomei Hezek and Novav. What it means is as follows. What would be the halacha? This is the simplest way of explaining the Gemara. If the brothers cut the grapes and made it into wine. And of course, usually wine is more expensive than grapes. But here we have a whatever situation that the wine, is price of wine drops. And the price of wine now is less than the price of grapes when they cut the grapes. So we said that they're gazlonim. And the halacha is the mishalim kshas gzeila. But the shas gzeila here the grapes were more expensive than the wine is worth now. So the halacha is that they have to pay kishasa gzeila. You know what you have to pay? The value of the grapes, not the value, the lesser value of the wine. Another way of learning is that when you make wine, you lose some grapes. They have to reimburse for the lost grapes. Another way the Rishonim try to learn is that this Bukhar said, I didn't want wine, I wanted raisins. And you were making me wine, caused me significant loss. So now the way to understand the Gemara, it turns out that Rabbi Yosef is not arguing with the Tanakhama. What Rabbi Yosef is just adding is that if the brothers turned the grapes into wine, so they paying Kishas Agzela, but sometimes paying Kishas Agzela works to their detriment. Where? When the price of wine is lower than the price of grapes. Ask the Gemara, Heichi Itmad Rav Huka Bar Chama, where do we find this Shakla V'Tarya? Aha. Damar Yudah M'Shmul. B'chor Pashut Shanich Lehem Aviyim Anovim U'Botzrim, Seisim U'Moskim. You have two sons. One's a B'chor and one's not. And he left the grapes that were cut, the owls that were cut. So the Halach is B'chor Noitel Pishnayim. Says the Gemara, Afilo Dorchim. Even if they made him into wine. Ask the Gemara, Dorchim, why is the Halach if the non-Bukhar made into wine that he has to pay the value of wine? Mikar envy hash the chamra. So isn't this a situation of gezela, of a shini maisa, making grapes into wine that we've learned that Halach is to pay shas gezela? Amaruk v'chamra, litum lo yidmei hezek enovav. Indeed, you pay kishas gzela. But sometimes paying kishas gzela will be more expensive than paying current value. Another Gemara. Amar Basi. B'char shenot techele kaposhet. If a B'char took, they were dividing a property, and the B'char says, you know what, I'm not asking for pishnayim, just give me a portion like everybody else. Viter. What he said is acceptable. So as the Rishonim introduced the Gemara, we've learned earlier that a Bechor has a right to relinquish his right. Meaning as follows. In Yerusha, you don't have a right to relinquish, you don't have an ability to relinquish your right. That means if somebody's a Yerush, his Yerusha becomes his, they divide it, he gets a share. Now if he chooses to give it away to a brother or to anyone else, you could do with your money whatever you want. But you can't say I'm not a Yerush, because the Torah makes you into a Yerush. A Bechor, as we learned earlier, has the right, since it's a matana, going back to the concept that we keep on coming back to, he has the right to say, you know what, I don't want the gift. So that clearly is acceptable. The question that Al Gemara is now going to address is in a situation where the Mechor was Mevater, he relinquished the right in a specific property, does that mean he only relinquished his right in this specific property, or does it mean he relinquished his rights in everything that the father left? My Viter. So it's actually a machloikas. Rapapa Mishmei Rav Amma Vita Baisasada. He relinquished his right in that specific field, but not in anything else. Rapapa Mishmei Rav Amma Vita Bechon Lekosim Kulam. If he relinquished his right in one piece of property, it means that he relinquished his rights in everything. Says the Gemara. Kasavar, Ein Lo Lebechor Koidim Chalukah. Kesavar, his reasoning is because the Bechor doesn't have any rights before the actual division takes place. The Gemara says we're going to address a very fundamental question, which we touched upon earlier. At what point does the Bechor get entitled to the Pishnayim? Does he get entitled to the Pishnayim as soon as the father passes away, even though the rest of Yerusha is not entitled to until later on? Or is he entitled to the Pishnayim when the Yerusha is divided, he'll get two portions as a Bechor. This opinion holds that he only gets the Yerusha, he only gets his share as it's being divided. So if the father left three, four, whatever number of fields, he gets his Pishnayim as each specific field is being divided. So when this specific field is being divided, and he's entitled to the Pishnayim, he chooses to give it up, fine. It's nothing to do with the other fields. The other fields haven't been touched and haven't been spoken about and aren't on the table. That's what the Gemara says. Ksava Eilo Lebechor Koidim Chalukah. And the Mepharshim say, he had to learn, as you know, I usually don't learn parentheses. He had to learn the parentheses, say the Mepharshim. Mad Osul Yadi Ochel. He only is entitled as something is divided. Idach Layachal aren't on the agenda yet. V'rapapi mishmei de Rav Amar vita b'chalan chosim kulam. He gives up everything. Why? Because he obviously holds k'sava sheyesh le'b'chal kain chaluka, that the division of the estate has nothing to do with pishnayim. Pishnayim is a freestanding issue, and when the b'chal relinquishes the pishnayim or midach b'ha ach b'kulam, means he relinquished everything. Says the Gemara, this fundamental machloikus, or when the Bechar becomes the owner or the entitled to the Pishnayim, is it Kaidim Chaluk before we even attempt to divide the state, or only as the state is being divided? Says the Gemara, this machloikus had Rapapi Rapapa, la b'ferishitma. We don't find them that they're explicitly arguing about it. El Machlal Itla. We learn it from a situation that they discussed. There was the following incident. The Hu Bechar, the Azul Zav and Nichsa the Deyu the Pashut. There was a Bechar, there was somebody, a father passed away. He left over a piece of property. Make a very simple story. He left over two sons, a Bechar and a Pashut. And the father passes away. And the Bechar went and took the entire property. Didn't take into account his brother and sold it. Then the brother passed away. So Azul Yasmi b'nei Pashut l'meichat Tamri. So the brothers Yorshim came to this field and they started eating fruit from the field. Mehena l'kuchas mechena. So the people who bought the field started hitting them, saying, "How are you coming to this field and eating fruit that doesn't belong to you?" Amrlu krovim. So the krovim of these Yisoyimim who were trying to stick up for them said, "Loi b'stayu d'zivtin el nechsayu." It's bad enough that the bechor sold the Pashut's portion without permission, and they bought it. They were accomplices to this crime, so to speak. Now they're gonna, when these children come to eat fruit from property that really truthfully belongs to them, you're gonna hit them for it? Asukam made the Rava. So this question came to Rava. Amalu, so he says, that the Mechir was totally invalid. Why was the Mechirin totally invalid? Ma Sava, where Puppy holds, what did Rava mean when he said the words Loyasa Klum? Bapalga. In the part of that was belonging to the, that was belonging to the Pashut, and not only that part, but as we've been learning, let's learn the case simple again. We have one field and two brothers, a Bechor and a Pashut. So how does the halacha look at the division of this field? The halacha looks at the division of this field that there's actually three shares to this field. There's the part that belongs to the Pashut, and the Bechar gets two portions, one as a son, and one as a Bechar. So says the Rashbam, what he was saying was, certainly he had no right to sell the Pashut's portion. I can't go sell your property. He can't even sell his property that he is getting, his third that he's getting as a son. Why? Because as I said earlier, you don't get ownership of your Yerusha until it's physically divided. And since this wasn't properly divided, he not only is not the owner of the part that's owned by his brother, he's also not the part that will become his, but it requires chalukah, which did not take place. He's only an owner on one third. Which third? The Pishnayim. Why? Because this opinion holds that the Bechor becomes the owner of the Pishnayim portions, Kaim Chaluka, as soon as the father passes away. Ma'as Savar, the Kula, and the other Mandama said that even in the Chelik Bechayra, it's nothing. Why is it nothing? Because this Mandama is of the opinion that not only in the share that you get as a son, does it not become yours until it's actually physically divided? But even the part that you get as a Bechor, you don't get until it's actually physically divided. So now, we've identified a Machlaikis. At what point does the Bechor become the owner of the Pishnayim? Kaidim Chaluka or Bishas Chaluka? Which has implications to the question of Vitor. If you say that he becomes the owner, Kaidim Chaluka, so the Vitor of one part is a veto for everything. If you, on the other hand, says that he only becomes the owner of the Pishnayim Shir at the Shas Chalukah, each vitur is viewed separately. Says Shalch Matam, says the Gemara B'chor, Shemach HaKoyin Chalukah, Loyosu Klum. Not only on the part that he gets as a son, but even the part that he gets as a B'chor. Why? Because obviously the halacha is, Alma, that they held in Eretz Yisrael, Eilei L'B'chor HaKoyin Chalukah. That the B'chor is not entitled not only to his share as a son, but even to his share as a B'chor, to any of it, until the actual Chalukah takes place. However, the halacha is not that way, says the Gemara. The Hilchsa, however, the halacha indeed is, Yesh lo lebechor kainim chalukah. And therefore, since he has a share kainim chalukah, the vitur, if we follow that opinion, the vitur in one portion is an indication that he's mevater his entire pishnayim portion. And therefore, says the Gemara, interesting story. Mazutra merizba, palu b'tzana de palpuli, b'hadi achin b'shava. What happened here was like this. There was a brother. There was a father that passed away. Left over maybe a very decent Yerusha. He also left over a sack of pepper. So and he had a Bechor. And when they were dividing that pepper, so the Bechor said, you know what, I'm not going to make a big deal about the Pishnaim and this sack of pepper. And this I'll divide equally with my brothers. But this was a very costly mistake. Because we hold that Yesh Lo Bechor Mishas Kaidim Chalukah. And since we hold Yesh Lo Bechor Kaidim Chalukah, the division, the vitur at any point represents a vitur in everything, and therefore he lost his pishnaim in everything. Paul b'tzana the people b'hada achim b'shava. Also kamei Ravashi, amalei hoyel v'tarta b'mitzis, since he showed vitur on this bag of pepper, v'tarta b'chol and chasm kulam, that shows total vitur, and you don't get any pishnaim on any of the state that your father left. Says the Mishnah. Haimer, if somebody says, ish ploini b'chor, if somebody says, ish ploini b'ni b'chor, lo yita pishnayim, he's not entitled to pishnayim. We'll explain in the Gemara why. Ish ploini b'ni lo yirish im echov, lo yamaklum. If somebody says, this is my son, but he should not get a share of the Yerusha, what he's saying is meaningless. Shista mashakos b'tayra. Which means as follows. Everybody's sitting here and thinking, is there no way of writing a will? Is there no way of writing a will that you want to give a son more or less, or give a daughter, or give a wife? So the answer is, of course you can. And we're going to be discussing in the coming shiurim how a halachic will can be written. But what the Gemara, what the Mishnah is teaching us, says Seder Mefarshim, is that your language is crucial. If you want to use the word Yerusha, you can't change the word, you can't change the rules. Why? Because the rules of Yerusha are set forth in the Torah. The rules of Yerusha are set forth in the Torah. And you can't be masna mashakos b'Torah. You can't change those rules. You could say, I want to give a gift. A gift is not Yerusha. But if you're going to follow and use the word Yerusha, you can't make your own rules. The Torah sets the rules. Otherwise, it's considered masna mashakos b'Torah. And that's why, so the Tshuvas Devar Chaim discusses this, the Mechas Yitzchak discusses this, why it's so important if somebody wants to write a halachic will, he has to be very careful that in that will, one word not show up. The word Yerusha. Because as soon as you use the word Yerusha, you're locked in to the word, to the rules of the Torah. And the Mechas Yitzchak goes further to say, even if anyone reads the document, and it becomes obvious that this person was looking to divide his estate whatever way he wanted to divide the state, it wouldn't change the reality. The fact that he used that word Yerusha puts him into the corner that he has to follow the Yerusha and any other rules and any other statement that he made should become irrelevant. But then there's a very fundamental question. Actually, to the question that we just discussed, we've mentioned this part previously, Brisker Rav. Fine. I use the word Yerusha and then I write things that aren't consistent with the Hilchus Yerusha. So we have a situation that I was masna mashakos b'Torah. We'll discuss that rule in the Gemara in a moment. So obviously what I did is that Tanai is a meaning, is an incorrect Tanai. So what should happen? What should happen is, since the Tanai is not a good Tanai, it should void the entire document. Why are we saying that the document's not voided? and we follow the Hilchos Yerusha. It's obvious they wanted to follow it tonight. Says the Brisker Rav, a very big chiddush. He says this entire concept that a Tanai has halachic validity is a chiddush. Where do we learn? It's a chiddush in the Torah by Bnei God of Bnei Ruvein. It's a that there is such a halachic concept called Tanai is a very big chiddush. And there are parameters when this chiddush could be used. You know when? When the rules of Tanoim are being applied. So as we've learned so many times, you have to be Tanai Kofel, and you have to have Kain Kodim Lalav. Another rule is it can't be Tanai Kodim Lamaisa. Because if it's it can't be Tanai Amash Kosh B'Torah. Because if you're Masna Amash Kosh B'Torah, it's not that that Tanai is not good, and the entire act is meaningless. The Tanai is not good. And the Chiddush HaTorah that we follow Tanoim won't be applied, and we're left with everything without Tanai. Hamachalik Nechosov continues the Mishnah Labana Valpiv. If somebody is dividing up the state, Ribel Echad Amid Lachad, Vishves Lachar, he didn't change the rules. Only people, this is the way we have to learn the Mishnah at this point, only people who are supposed to get are in the will. But instead of it being divided in the way the Torah said, he wants one brother to get more, one brother to get less, the Bechor not to get the Pnei Shnayim, Tvarv Kiyamim. However, that's fine. However, it uses the words Yerusha, or Yamaklum. Kosov, Beim B'tchil, Beim B'soy, Beim B'emtz, Beim B'soy, Mishum Matana, Tvarv Kiyamim, we'll explain this in the Gemara too. Ask the Gemara, Leim Masnitz, like Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah seems not to be following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, Amad Davish of a moment, Tanai Kayim. Yehuda's opinion is that even though we just said the Masna Amashikasi B'Toira Tanoi bottle, that's only when it comes to Issa V'Heter. But when it comes to Mammon, when it comes to financial issues, Masna Amashikasi B'Toira Tanoi Kayim. The Tanya, Haimel Isha, if somebody says to a woman, we know the Torah obligates every husband, Sherik Susava Nasai, to give his wife support. Sherik means food. Ksusa means clothing, and it also means to have relations with her. So I'm Elisha, if somebody is Mekadosh and Isha, Harev Mekadosh and Yamanash Einloch Alai, Sh'er Ksus for Aina, that I won't be obligated, Harez Mekadosh with Tanoi bottle. The Tanoi is meaningless. Why? Because according to Rameya, it's Masna Mashikos of Tayyar. Rabbi Hudaimer, the Dovish of a Mammon, if it's a Dovish of a Mammon, Tanoi Kayim. So here we're talking about money. Yerusha is a state. So why does our Mishnah say that making a Tanai in your will that goes against the Torah, that Tanai is meaningless, why isn't it considered Master Masha Kosba Torah, but Davish B'Mammon, which will be who the holds, is a valid Tanai? And as the Rishonim explained the question sharper, we have a rule throughout Shas that whenever we have a Machloikas remain Rabbi Yehuda, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda is the one that says, they're making a Tanai against what the Torah says, B'dabish B'mamin, it's a valid Tanai. Amish that says this differently, suggests the Gemara perhaps, Amish is incorrect. Now there was Shonim debate. According to Yehuda, somebody says, Hared B'kadeshesli, Amnash En L'chalai Shek Sus V'ayna, the halacha is that the Tanai is Kayim. Certainly on Shevik Sus, because Shevik Sus is pure money. So food, clothing. What about Oina? Most Rishonim say that Rabbi Yehuda will be of the opinion that Oina is going to be considered Masna Mashikos B'Toyra. Oina is not money. And therefore the Tanai is bottle as far as the Oina. Which is a problem. Why? Because he didn't make three separate Tanoim. Amnash Ein Lecha Lai She'er. Amnash Ein Lecha Lai Ksus. Amnash Ein Lecha Oina. That we could say the first two Tanoim stand and the third Tanai falls. He made one Tanai. So how can we have it partially stand and partially fall? The only answer that I saw in explaining, the Rishonim explaining, that even though he said one phrase, Amnash Ein Lecha Lai Ksher Ksus V'Ayna, we have to look at that one phrase as three separate phrases. There are other Rishonim, and this kash is part of the reason they say their pshat, that say that even Ayna is considered a Dovish Shabbat Mammon, because anything that's not Issa V'Heter, Kosher Treif, Mutter Asr is under the category of Davish B'Mammon, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even as far as Oina, it's considered like a Davish B'Mammon, because it's a physical pleasure, and the halacha is the Tanai would be kind. So now we're back to our question. How could our Mishnah say that this Tanai is not a valid Tanai? It's a Tanai B'davash B'mamon, and a Tanai B'davash B'mamon, Master Master Kosh B'Torah is acceptable. Answers the Gemara. Feel Tanai Rabbi Yehuda. Hosom Yodav Kamachal. Hachal Kamachal. A woman that enters into a marriage with a husband, and the husband tells her up front, Amanash Ein L'chashek Sus, and she agreed, it's fine. Here, the father didn't consult with his children, and therefore, it's not the same situation. Amar Rabbi Yosef, continues the Gemara. Amar Ish Pliny B'ni B'chayri. If somebody walks in and says, this man is my son, the B'char, Naito Pishnayim. So then the son is entitled to the Pishnayim. As we're going to learn, the Torah teaches us, Yakir, that a son, that a father has a right to identify which of his sons as a B'char. But if the father only said, Ish Pliny B'char Hu, Eina Naito Pishnayim. Because he didn't say B'ni. And maybe what he meant was, Dilma Bukhu de Imakama. He meant he's a Bukhar. You know what he's a Bukhar? He's a Petarechim. He was his mother's firstborn. And as we know, as far as Hilchus Yerusha are concerned, how do we identify Bukhar, the father's first son? As far as Petarechim, as far as Pinyan Abed is concerned, we look at the mother's firstborn. Says the Gemara, Hu dasl kamei de rabbi b'bachanam. Amalei, m'chuskani b'zeshu Bukhar. I know for sure that this individual is a Bukhar. Amrei Menayat. How do you know? Says that the Davakarle Avu Bukhra Simchla. His father always called him, you foolish Bukhar. Says the Gemara, Dilma Bukhra de Imahu. Maybe what he meant was that he's a Bukhar because his mother's firstborn. The Kab Bukhra de Ima, Namei Bukhra Sikhla Karle. Because a firstborn to a mother is called the Bukhar Sikhla. So I saw two very nice Vertlachanis. One, Mepharshim say, the fact that he's called Bukhur Sikhla is a raya that he's a Bukhur to his mother. Otherwise, why would he be called Bukhur Sikhla? So Mashah says, why is a Bukhur to a mother called a foolish Bukhur? He says a very interesting pshat. He says, somebody's a Bukhur to a mother only can lose in that game. As I said a moment ago, he doesn't get Pishnayim. But let's say this Bukhur finds out that his father never made him a pidyon aben. What would be the halacha? He'll have to make it. The halacha is if your father didn't make you a pidyon aben, you have to make your own pidyon aben. So he's never a fool. It costs the money to pay for his pidyon aben, but he doesn't get the pishnayim that a bechor gets. Mashal's vart. Teres Chaim says a very interesting vart. He says as follows. The reason normally somebody would not call his son a bechor sukhla. How does he talk to a child that way? It's not a way to bring up your children to call them fools. So if you use that word, it can't mean that he meant to denigrate your child. How do you denigrate your child? It must be that he meant to say that he's only Bukhar li'imai. Continues the Gemara. Hu dasl kamed Rav Chanina. Amalei mechusani b'zeshu Bukhar. Amalei menayat. Amalei dechav osl gabei avua. When he would come to his father. Amalei zil gabei shichis b'ri. De machruhu. Go to my son shichis. He's Bukhar. Umay sirakai. And his saliva could heal an eye ailment. Asked him of a dimma bukhra de imahu. Maybe he was a bukhar to his mother. How do we know that just because his saliva heals an eye ailment, that he's a bukhar, a real bukhar to his father? Says the Gemara, Gemiri, bukhra de abba masireka, bukhra de abba masireka. Only the saliva of a bukhar to his father could heal somebody's eyes, not his mother's. So it's a very nice part from the Imri Emes. The Imri Emes says, on the pasuk when Esav came to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak said, I already gave the bracha to Yaakov. So what does Yitzchak say? Hachi akveni ze pamayim. Yaakov already tricked me the second time. Es b'chorasi lokach. So the Medrash says, Hachi, Yitzchak started coughing. So Miriam says, what did Esav start coughing. Why did Esav start coughing? Says the Miriam. Esav told Yitzchak, I'm the Bechor. You have to give me the brachas. Yaakov can't take him away. So Yitzchak said, if you're Bechor, you know the pasuk says, V'techene eina Yitzchak. Yitzchak started getting blind. So let's say you spit and heal me. So Esav started to cough to get up some saliva and heal Yitzchak. And it didn't work. So it was a riot, Bechorasi Lokach, that the Mechira, the Bechira, was a real Mechira. Well, how do we see the Mechira was a valid Mechira? The fact that Esav's saliva didn't heal Yitzchak. Yaakov ran. What? Yitzchak didn't know to ask Yaakov. Yitzchak didn't know that Yaakov did that. But why didn't Yaakov do it?
Expert is here. Why should I touch?